Okay.
So we're in the stage where we're going to do 7 parshas in 4 weeks and finish Vayikra, starting with last week. So we have a double parsha last week. This week we get 1 week off and then again a double. And just to summarize what's contained in the 7 aliyahs this week. In the first one, we read about the avoda in the base of Migdal, kippur done by the Kohen Gadol. Only the Kohen Gadol once a year is allowed to enter the Kodshei Kodshim, and he doesn't wear the gold. Big day kahuna, he wears plain linen ones, and he changes on Yom Kippur his clothing 5 times, and he does 10 times that he washes from the kiyar, right? And this is also the introduction to the concept of the scapegoat, the sor to Azazel, and there's a tremendous amount here. Once that's finished, and that's what we lay in Rishon, we then deal with the remaining services on Yom Kippur. We have the Isser, the prohibition to offer a korban outside of the Mishkan or the Beis HaMikdash. When the Beis HaMikdash was in existence, you could not use what we call the private altar. And there were times, though, as we learned in a Mishnah, I think it may have been in Megillah, that when private altars were allowed and when they weren't allowed. The third aliyah mentions that it's usher for anyone to eat blood. We then have the listing of the 15 prohibited sexual relations that exist. And the Chachamim say, and Rabbi Tendler in his outline writes, there's no doubt that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created physical intimacy as a way to continue populating the world, and it's got to be exceedingly, exceedingly important. But it's not something that becomes and should not become a totally physical and depraved activity. In the fourth aliyah, we have the things that today's modern Jews cut out. It says that homosexuality, which it equates with bestiality, are also. It says that there's a special relationship that those who in Eretz Yisroel have to the land of Eretz Yisroel, and we're told do not defile the Kedusha of Eretz Yisroel. We then get into Kedoshim, and we talk about Kedoshim Tiyu, the Jewish people should be holy, somehow emulating HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Kedusha. Shabbos, the awe of parents, not worshiping idols, tzedaka, honesty, paying wages on time. The fifth aliyah talks about the isser to show deference in administering justice based on the status of the litigants, and the requirement to He says to reprimand everybody. We have to make sure that we make sure that not only we do mitzvos and not averos, but others do. We have the prohibition of shatness, the mixture of wool and linen. We have the forbidding of cutting our payas, right, our sideburns below a certain level. The issur of tattooing, premarital sex, and serving the occult. The sixth and the seventh aliyah deal with the proper and equal treatment for someone who's a ger, a convert, the need to be honest in business dealings, the prohibition of serving the Molech God. And again, we have specific punishments listed that based in could administer for anyone who does any of the 15 sexual activities that had listed in Achrei Moisin forbidden. The end of Kedoshim explains that Kedusha means being separate from other nations. And we're told there are three formats, three aspects of holiness, time, place, and person. Achrei Mois began by presenting the ultimate integration of the three in the Kohen Gadol, entering the Kodshei Kodshim, and on Yom Kippur. The end of Kedoshim says that Eretz Yisroel, B'nei Yisroel, and time in general are intended to reflect the integration of godliness, holiness, into daily living, both of individuals and nations. Whether any nation other than Klal Yisroel even steps up to take on the challenge, you know, seems to be almost non-extant. And the extent through which Klal Yisroel accepts the responsibility of the Meleches Kayanim, a kingdom of priests, the Goy Kadosh, and a holy nation, that is the success in fulfilling those goals is how Klal Yisroel retains the right not to be exiled from Eretz Yisroel, but to live there securely, right, doing mitzvot. Because we're told that there's a way or schar for doing mitzvot in Eretz Yisroel, which is not somehow the same as doing them in Chutz La'aretz. One of the Rishonim says that the reason we do mitzvot Chutz La'aretz is so that we will know how to do them when we're in Eretz Yisroel. Okay. Rabbi Rosner in his Sefer talks about the lottery with the goats. Aaron takes two he-goats. He places them before HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the entrance of the Ohel Moed, and he takes two lots in some type of container. One was marked Hashem, and one was the other for Azazel. This was a major part of the Avoda on Yom Kippur. And by Rosner says, imagine, if you will, if we're going to personify the minds of the goats. They look exactly the same. They cost the same. They have the same height, etc., etc. And they're standing next to another. He says, let's imagine they strike up a conversation. They wonder, what are we doing here? Neither knows. Suddenly, one of them is taken into the mikdash, where it's slaughtered, and its blood is sprinkled on the altar. The remaining goat says, oh boy, what's going to happen to me? And then he sees that a gentleman is leading him out of the Beis HaMikdash. And it says, I'm free. It's led to the top of a mountain in beautifully fresh air and gorgeous scenery. It says, wow, I'm the lucky goat. But all of a sudden, he gets hurled off a mountain and he gets torn to pieces. And it realizes, I guess, in its last moment, that the chosen goat had parts of it brought to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, Shemchen Raphael Hirsch suggests, if a goat designated for Azazel had any intellect, it would be happy with the situation initially. Its friend was sacrificed, and it got a period of freedom to eat grass along the way, etc. But in reality, it was the loser. And what is this called? He says it's called misconception. He says, oftentimes, we're all subject to misconceptions on who is better in life and who is not so well off. We may at times look at people who are not subject to mitzvot. We see them Saturday morning putting on their shorts, going to the country club. They're off for a day of golf. They're going to have drinks in the bar, right? They're going to go to the pool, and they don't have to worry about shul, stuff like that. But are they going to end up being treated somehow like the goat to Azazel? Is that what happens in retrospect? At times, we're called upon to sacrifice some of the things we would rather do to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we may at some times be able to have clarity of thought and see that maybe the life of leisure in everything else is not paradise. It doesn't really yield necessarily long-term satisfaction. The Haftarah for Kisisa is where Eliyahu HaNavi went into competition with the false prophets of Baal on Har Kyama, Mountain of Carmel, to prove who is God. Is Baal the true deity, or as we know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Each one of the two sides, so to speak, were given a cow to sacrifice. And the winner of this contest would be the one who is able to bring fire down from heaven to consume the cow and accept it as a korban. It says, he quotes Rashi on Melachim, where he says, the cow that knew it was going to be shechted by the Baal priests refused to move. It stuck its hoofs into the ground. And it says, Eliyahu went over and said, what's the problem? And he says, the cow answered, why do I have to be shechted for Baal? Why do I have to end up being an instrument for idol worshiping? Why is that my destiny? Eliyahu said, no, you've got a misconception. You, just like the fellow cow that's going to be shechted for Hashem, are both having been chosen to create a Kiddush Hashem. Your Kiddush Hashem will be by not having fire come down from Shemayim. Your co-calf, or co-cow, is going to be brought up, but you're each going to accomplish the same thing. The failure to have you sacrificed and the success in having the other cow sacrificed will prove the total lack of honesty in serving Baal, and that Hashem, who Elohim, God is the only God. And Rabbi Rosner writes, the decision as to which of the two goats on Yom Kippur went out to be pushed off the cliff and which was shechted was totally done by lottery, determined by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It is out of human control, and we could almost say it's arbitrary, but there is no arbitrary. The Torah says it's a goyro. Goro, which can be called lottery, can also be described as lottery, not lottery, destiny. This was the destiny of this animal. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the choice. He says, this is the lesson of these two goats. They're identical, but somehow Hashem has determined different destinies. Different means of being the Kadesh Hashem. Different means of bringing atonement to Klal Yisroel on Yom Kippur. He says, to the extent we can, we should all avoid misconceptions. The misconception being that somehow fate, destiny, etc., happen, that there's no hashgacha pratis. We have to continue to remember there's hashgacha pratis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu controls all. As they say, Hakol bidei shemayim chutz miyira shemayim. Everything in existence is determined by HaKadosh Baruch Hu in heaven, except for the degree to which we fear HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the degree to which we adhere to Torah and Mitzvah. Okay. At the beginning, when we talk about the Yom Kippur service, it says some details appear in the text of the Torah, and he says some aspects of the Avodah depended on the Torah Shel Baal Peh, the oral one. It says, the Kohen Gadol will take a censer full of coals from the fire on the Mizbeach, the outer Mizbeach, and his hands should be full of sweet incense, being Ketoreth, beaten very fine. He should bring it within the curtain, meaning within the Kodshei Kodshim. He should put the Ketoreth on the fire before Hashem, so that the cloud of incense may cover the ark cover, the front of the Oroin. They call it Oroin HaEdus, the Oroin of Testimony, because the Luchos and the Torah, Moshe's Torah, are in it. And it says, so that we will not die. Our Averos won't cause us to pass. It says, it isn't entirely clear from the specific text when the Kohen Gadol places the incense into this censer to create a cloud of smoke. Is it before or after he passes through the curtain, the division between the area called the Kodesh and the Kodshei Kodshim? We know if we read the Mishnayos in Yuma, it says that there were two curtains, and he went from north to south. When he got to the south, he turned to the left, and he came back the other way. And then there was another break, and he turned right, and then he was in the Kodesh. So when was there supposed to be this incense? Did he appear the very first moment with incense in the Kodshei Kodshim, or did he have to walk in, go to the spot right in front of the Oroin, and there cause the smoke to rise? And of course, we know that Tzidukim, who didn't believe in the Torah Shabbat Peh, they said it says the Enon Era Ala Kapoires, that he has to appear before the ark cover with this smoke. Therefore, obviously, he's got to do it before he gets there. And the Gemara teaches us, no way, not the way it happened. The halacha is he has to go there, put down the fire pan, move from one container into his clenched fist, and then put that onto the fire pan. And he says, there are two of the ideas that the Bali Musar say, and he quotes the Sefer Mayone Shel Torah. He says, Divrei Shaar HaChayim, every great Jewish leader must first light his inner fire. Once the fire is burning there, only then can it influence others. If my fire is not lit, I can't affect others. The Kohen Gadol, whose role was to educate others, had to light his own flame within the Kodesh Kodshim before kindling the flames of others. This was symbolized by the Kohen Gadol only being allowed to burn the incense once he was in the presence of the Kodshei Kodshim. Then he quotes the Drash HaIyun. The Tzuk Tadukim rejected Torah Shebal Peh, the oral Torah. They looked at the world and they said, what makes sense from what we see, feel, and perceive, that's how we do Torah. They burned the incense outside and they would bring it into the Kodshei Kodshim. So if they had a Kohen Gadol who was a Tzaddiki, which I think did happen, you had that. We believe the opposite. The light of Torah has to radiate and has to light up the entire world. We have to take Torah values and use that to be an Or LaGoyim. But first, we have to allow Torah values to light up. Rav Kook suggested that shuls must have windows so they can serve as a beacon of Kedusha in the middle of society, radiating out. First, it starts within. It starts at the shulchan, where the Sefer Torah is laid, and where we learn about mitzvahs. We inside connect, and somehow we can radiate Shechina. We do not model the Torah on what we think Olam, the world, is. Olam means hidden, means God somehow has hidden his true presence in the world, and you've got to sort of dig to find it. Torah values are what we do. We know that Beis HaMikdash radiated light outwards. It didn't need any light coming from outside to have light in the Beis HaMikdash. And that's the metaphor we have vis-a-vis Torah and mitzvos, right? When it says light our fire, it's the Torah that lights our fire. Okay. Thanks very much. We will pick up tomorrow.